is episode 264 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me is my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, Brandon. Nice to be with you, although feeling a little defeated. That's the first time I've had to watch our beloved Seahawks lose in person, and that was very frustrating.
It's never a good feeling, but don't you feel like when you actually go to the game, and even though you lose, it's hard to have like a bad day there? Like, there's still you still went to the game and had a good time, even though it was a loss. That's how it feels to me anyway.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things that Brittany had commented on, that being her first game, that bringing her along when we were at Pizza Professionals at the end of the game. And people were walking by, and she's like, even after a loss, everybody's still in a pretty good mood and look like they're having a good day.
Yeah.
You know, because you have fun with the, you know, your fellow 12s, and it all works out nicely that way. And like, I know I had a ball with all the other little flockers that showed up. That was great. But I did not have a ball with the performance on the field, especially while I was sitting in the rain, you know, to sit there and quote unquote enjoy the product on the field. Because that was ugly, man.
It was an ugly game. The Seahawks lose 33-27. They're down 20-7 at halftime. They're able to score 20 points in the fourth quarter, but they were just too far behind before they made their comeback. And, you know, it goes to that idea of, you know, Pete always says, can you win the game in the first quarter, yada, yada, yada. You can kind of lose the game in the first and second and third quarter.
Yeah, you may not be able to win the game in those quarters, you can certainly lose it. Yeah. And Pete definitely played a large role in the result of this game. We've talked during seasons past about, well, that was a kicker loss, right? You know, where we watched Blair Walsh miss a bunch, or, you know, that was a coaching loss. Mm-hmm. And we can kind of point to, you know, members of the coaching staff. And this feels like a coaching loss. Like, the team wasn't sharp coming out. Like, way too many penalties, just sloppy football. Ball security was a problem. And then there's a lot of questionable decisions along the way that I think really left a lot of points out there that could have been had and make this a winnable game, even though you give up a score via special teams and a score on a defensive score as well.
Yeah, when the other team scores in every phase of the game, special teams, defense, and offense, that's when it really feels like it's, you have to put it on coaching at that point. You can't really pin it on any one particular player, although Chris Carson getting a lot of attention this last week with it being three games in a row now that he's fumbled. Mm-hmm. And I know you and I went back and forth on whether he had three fumbles or four fumbles now throughout the week. And I'm not going to argue with you now. I think I just have to agree with you.
Hey, cool. I'm glad you came around to my side. I mean, if the ball hits him in the top of the numbers, like in the chest, like you still got to corral that as a professional running back, right? Like that's like saying, well, all right, Russell threw a pass to DK and it didn't hit him like dead nut center in the middle of the numbers. It was just slightly, you know, above his shoulder and to the right. Well, sure, but you still got to make the catch. You know, you're a professional at this, right? And that's how I felt about that handoff with Chris Carson. Was it a slightly high? Slightly?
Slightly, come on. Okay, I said I'm not going to argue with about it. Stop Look, bringing dude, it back up.
High would be like head height above the shoulders. Like if it's still,
if
the
it
ball's
hits him
still
in the face
the
mask,
numbers.
It's too high according to Adam Emmert.
Don't, yeah, if it hits him in the numbers, that's literally the chest.
Like I said, you win this round because okay. Carson fumbled in a third straight game. And this time it gets picked up and taken in for a touchdown, puts the team behind 13-7. And yes, they had come back. They had gotten the Tyler Lockett touchdown, a nice little route, hits him in the back corner of the end zone. Russell Wilson does to bring it 7-7 early on in the game. They overcome that early special teams mistake, the Will Dissly mm-hmm. penalty that puts him back deep, a Ben Burkervin penalty that makes the Michael Dixon re-punt, and then you have the special teams touchdown after Michael Dixon kicks it short. And that was, the more I watched that punt return and that whole series, the more frustrated I get.
Oh my gosh. And look, Dixon's having a sophomore slump.
Yeah.
It's happening. It's happening right in front of your eyes.
How evident was it in a game like this where Thomas Morstad on the other side of the field was just punting lights out, the same exact conditions, and he could do no wrong, and then you have Michael Dixon on the other side of the field where you had one or two where you're like, okay, that was pretty good.
And then three or four that were, like, terrible, including one that was legit awful.
Yeah.
That ends up being a score on special teams. And really the difference in the game when it's all said and done. I mean, you give up two cheapies like that on touchdown, you know, you're gonna lose. Because honestly, the defense held the Saints relatively in check, short of just the abysmal freaking tackling. And look, I know a lot of people were like, well, that's not a hallmark of a Pete Carroll team. And I can't believe that happened. You know, in the wet, when they're really going to feature Alvin Kamara, you know they are, because they're not going to put it all on Teddy. And he's going to get 1,000 touches, a slippery runner in slippery conditions at the beginning of a season when the Seahawks traditionally struggle with tackling. That is a hallmark of a Pete Carroll team. You see it come to bite him here in this game. And the tackling was truly freaking atrocious. And then really, I mean, Russ missed on a couple throws too. I mean, he had Tyler in the end zone on a crossing route, you know, a deep over, and just overthrows him.
Yeah.
Like the mistakes are everywhere. And it's just, it's unbelievably frustrating. It just, the team couldn't have been less locked in.
Well, I think we are in agreement that the coaching is probably where some of the issues were. And I counted maybe, gosh, 7 decisions where you wonder if they made a difference and in this game. And that's a high number. And I want to go, I want to go through these, because you had at the start of the second quarter, the New Orleans punt goes out at the 2, and the Seahawks come out on the field and they have 12 guys on the field. And they choose to call a timeout rather than take a 1-yard penalty. I know some people were taking issue with that particular coaching decision. This is probably, of all of these 7 that I pointed out, I probably have the least amount of concern with this one.
Well, yeah, no kidding, since we decided we weren't going to use our timeouts anyways.
Right, yeah. They go into the half with 2 timeouts still. So, yeah, timeouts matter, and maybe the 1 yard doesn't matter much, but in the end, at least they used 1 timeout.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah, that one was tough just because of the idea that, you just give up a half a yard and you keep your timeout in your pocket, and that's going to serve you better going down this stretch. I mean, I think the one that was the most frustrating to me was the completion to Luke Wilson on the last drive before half, and they don't call timeout there.
Oh, see, and you're already, Adam, you're already putting Luke Wilson in the tight end spot when he's just joining the team this week.
Yeah, well, I already got to start blaming him for shit. I'm really excited about the return of Luke Wilson. It's going to be awesome. I love it.
Your tone of voice sounds almost exactly as the same tone of voice as Bobby Wagner. Like, he is not a Techno Thursday fan.
Good. I knew Bobby was my man.
Yeah, and it was Nick Vinette that was Russell connected with over the middle. Nick Vinette gets traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a 5th-round draft pick in 2020, and they decide to bring back Luke Wilson, which it actually seems like a net positive.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, it's a 5th, so whoop-de-doo. I mean, I guess we do find guys in the 5th, so that's fine. I could do without the shorts. And it just a little bit of the brosif mentality that Luke Wilson brings. Oh, and his inability to catch. There's that part too. So it's really fun having him back. And I can't wait. I can't wait for more of the Luke Wilson experience. Fortunately, a real Montana man plays tight end in Will Disley. And hopefully that'll keep Wilson off the field a lot.
Another touchdown for Will Disley in this game. And I do want to get to some of the positives from this, but to get through some of these coaching decisions, we'll get to the end of the half. But before that happened, I think there was another significant one, because after Carson fumbled, Pete Carroll chose to hold out Chris Carson for a few plays, but then they got into a situation where they were 3rd-and-1 and Carson comes back on the field. It kind of makes sense because Carson is known for picking up those 3rd-and-short, 2nd-and-short type plays. And that's kind of the guy that who else are you going to put on the field in those types mm-hmm. of situations? You do have Travis Homer, but Rashad Penny was mm-hmm. out, and we saw CJ Procise. He's not the guy to pick up the short yardage in those situations. So it makes sense to bring Carson out. And they go for it on third and one, but they come up short. And so they go for it again on fourth and one. They could have, I mean, it would have been like a 58-yard field goal, but mm-hmm. you could have punted it deep into the Saints' territory, made them drive the length of the field. But sure. instead, you go for it on fourth and one. You get aggressive. The Saints make the stop and then turn around and drive the 60 yards that it takes to go up 20-7 before the half.
Yeah, I don't mind at all that they went for it on fourth down there. Like, statistically speaking, like, it is a much better play to go for those sort of situations, those fourth and shorts like that. And the thing about it is that over time, you're going to not get a few. And that's just so happened to happen here. Like, I mean, I'm more upset with getting, caught with your pants down at the end of the half when it comes in regards to the clock.
Yeah.
Than I am with going forward on fourth.
Because it was 30 seconds left in the half where Russ completes that pass to Vinette, and then they don't call timeout. They have two timeouts.
Yeah. I mean, the clock's going. And I mean, I'm sitting next to Doug Schunzel-Harry, and he's like, I was like, why aren't we calling timeout? He's like, I don't think we have it. He's like, no, we have two. Yeah. And he's like, what, really? I was like, yeah. He's like, well, what are we doing? I was like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like you're saving one to try and take the timeout after completing the pass downfield. And listening to Pete Carroll after the press conference after the game, it sounded like he just didn't even think that it was a possibility that they might get the ball downfield and be in position to get points. So he didn't worry himself about taking a timeout in that situation. And if that's the case, right, why are you not taking a knee and just going into the locker room?
There you go. Because, I mean, the idea being that, okay, so you do call timeout there, right? And you don't end up going all the way down the field. You're going to give it back to the Saints with too much time now to, like, come back? I don't think so. So, like, I don't understand that one at all. That was unbelievably perplexing. And then not only that, but the way that the ball was completed to DK, it was so frustrating in the sense of it was quintessential Russell Wilson, right? Little scribble play, run around a little bit, chuck it up deep. DK makes a great catch. But you know what? That takes time. Right. It takes a lot of time to do that. And so, but, you know, by the time you get down there and it's completed, if you're not the Chicago Bears, you're not going to get a timeout there.
Yeah. How come we can't say as soon as his knee touches the ground that it's a timeout, but the Bears can?
I guess maybe Pete didn't do it because it didn't feel like he needed to.
Maybe.
I don't know. That was terrible.
And there's another one that was terrible that I don't know if this quite fits into a coaching decision. It didn't while I was watching the game, but listening to Pete in the press conferences after the game, it kind of made me question the idea of, in that situation, after the half, the Saints on their initial drive, and they hold the Saints, they stop the Saints. They hold them to fourth down, and they have to kick a long field goal. Al Woods is lined up over the center. Pete Carroll in the press conference says that he sees the official maybe go in and kind of looking at Al Woods as if, you know, maybe he'll tell Al to move over a little bit to line up properly like they did in the previous year, kind of giving people some leeway, letting them know the new rule. And mm-hmm. that would have been an opportunity for Pete Carroll to call a timeout. He doesn't. They end up taking the penalty, and the Saints drive the rest of the way down the field and put it up 27-7.
And yeah, that's another big play right there. I mean, penalties, you know, like, let's say Pete that still doesn't call timeout there, but you have to have Al Woods coached up to the point to where he's not over the center.
Right.
Like, that's something they've been calling now for a year in 3 weeks.
And that's not a hard thing. Like, know where you line up.
Pre-snap.
That's a clear coaching point.
Yes. And it's that part gets difficult to watch. I mean, the overall sloppiness of the football team throughout, from top to bottom of the roster, was absurd. It was absolutely absurd.
And I'm not even through all these, because I can go down to down 27-7, 3 minutes left in the third quarter. You talked about the Tyler Lockett being open on his way to the end zone. Mm-hmm. Russell has to rush the throw a little bit, ends up, you know, just outstretched arms on fourth down to Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm.
If they just go for a field goal rather than a touchdown in that situation, you're only at a 17-point deficit, which maybe could have been overcome at that point.
Yeah.
Again, it's just being a little bit too aggressive than I think he normally would be. And I'm not saying I don't mind being a little bit aggressive, but every mm-hmm. time they chose to be aggressive, it backfired.
Yeah. Well, I mean, another thing that happens on fourth down a lot with this team, when they do go for it, it turns into a bomb from Russ. Like, I'm not saying a completion, but he's throwing it deep.
Right.
Like, you know, what? We can't run like an option route with Lockett and pick up 4 yards? Like, we can't just do that?
Do like that picket fence play that they were pointing out that the Saints were doing.
Yeah.
Because, and we got a question about it in the email. He says, hey, guys, I wanted to ask you about this picket fence play that the Saints ran a few times against us. How the hell is that not a PI? Love to hear your thoughts. Go Hawks.
Why can't we run those?
I think we
get called for offensive pass interference every time.
Well, that's because maybe they aren't coached to do it right, like Sean Payton is coaching his guys to do it. Because go to that Saints 4th-and-1 play when they're on the 1 yard line. You look at the receivers; they go and they stand on the goal line and start blocking. It's okay to block. You just can't do it more than 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage. So they're doing it.
Not only that, you can't do it before the ball comes out your hand.
You can do it 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage, though.
You can't do it until the ball comes out.
No.
You can't start engaging your guy as a blocker until the ball comes out.
That's more than a yard down the field.
Within a yard, you can start muscling people up.
Yes. Even before the ball leaves the quarterback's hand.
So when the ball snapped, you just stand where you are and hope the other guy runs into you? Or like if he starts running towards the bubble screen receiver, you then block him as long as it's not further than the 1 yard. Is that the idea?
Yep.
All right. Because I don't think the officials call this consistently in any way, shape or form. Look, I was watching a little bit of the Cardinals Panthers game and bubble screen to Fitzgerald for a touchdown. Their first score, the Cardinals and guys were well more than a yard downfield. Definitely blocking before the ball came out of Kyler's hand. And touchdown.
Yeah.
Like Tom Brady does it all the time. And the Patriots do it all the time.
Well, and like, it might be one of those things, too, where the first couple times, if you're only a yard down the field when you're engaging the block, maybe 1 yard turns into 2 and 2 yards turns into 3. And the officials are kind of eyeballing it. But it's easy for the officials to see that you're within the 1 yard if all you're doing is standing on the goal line right. And you get it out
also
quickly.
Also remember that play is basically the play that shall not be talked about. It's the same kind of concept.
Let's not talk about
it's
that.
A de facto
why are you bringing
play.
This up? Yeah.
Because that's why we don't run it. Okay.
Okay. That's why we don't run it. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of the stupid little bubble screen bullshit on 3rd and 4th and short. I'm really happy to not see that in our playbook. During those situations. Unfortunately, for the first 2 drives of the game, all we did was throw little short screens and crap to the left, and it turns out they knew it was coming every single time.
So would you rather... So on 4th and short, would you rather go long to Malik Turner like they did when they were down 27-14 with just under 10 minutes?
I would rather have an offensive line that has the balls and the strength to go hat on a hat with the dude in front of him and push them back at least a half yard and then take somebody like Chris Carson, who knows how to thump people, and have him actually hold on to the catfishing ball and like just jam it down their throat, and you pick up 4th and 1 every time. You freaking dominate them, even though they know it's coming. There's nothing they can do to stop it. That's what I want. I don't want any of this rinky-dink bullshit. Catfish! Like, if you're going to be a physical football team, be one.
And what if you're not?
Well, then you're screwed. Do something else. Like, then be Tom Brady and the Patriots, right? And run all that, you know, dink and dunk BS. Like, if that's what you're going to do, then do that.
Yeah.
But don't say you're one thing and then do another.
Well, and I think that's part of my problem with the 4th and 1 late in the game, because they're on their own 28. They just run CJ Procise on a 3rd and short or on 3rd and 2.
Yep.
He doesn't pick up the first down on 3rd and 2. And it was interesting to go back and watch the TV, copy because Tony Romo, he did a good job of taking people through the thought pattern of the quarterback in the situation. You know, how pointing out that dudes are on, you know, kind of lined up on Russell's left side, so he doesn't really have the option to run there. He sees the blitzer coming from the right side and, you know, showing blitz pre-snap and how he may want to check out of a potential run play based on what he's seeing there. And so when he does check out of the run play and throws it to Malik Turner, it's not so surprising because you've gone through the quarterback's thought process, and that was interesting, but they failed to execute. And I think it might have had to do with Malik Turner because he looked like he beat his guy, but then he was lost as to where to expect the football.
Okay, that's fine. But does every check on a, you know, third or fourth and short run play have to be a bomb?
No, it doesn't.
Does it have to be a bomb or hand it off to the back?
Well, it depends on what the defense is giving you, too. Because they're looking for it to be short.
What they're usually looking for is it to be a run, right? If you're a run first team. So they load up the box. And again, that covers a lot of the very short routes. And then they keep their safeties very deep because they don't want to get beat deep on a cheapy score, which leaves that whole intermediate area nice and vulnerable. And we can't attack that.
Well, that's where Tyler was running his route and he was covered.
I don't know. I'd have to watch play again, yeah. I guess.
Anyway, so that being aggressive again in that situation, it backfires on him. And that miss downfield to Turner gives the Saints a short field. And then they proceed to take 5.5 minutes off the clock and put it up 33-14. Yeah, whereas if you would have punted in that situation, maybe the Saints don't score. Maybe you're able to still get 2 touchdowns late in the game like they ultimately did.
Well, the big problem there is that your defense has been on the field a good chunk of change at that point. And so if you don't get it, now you've got a relatively tired defense, you know, running back out there to try to stop them. A defense that has shown they haven't tackled well all day.
Yeah.
They've done a good job of keeping them out of the end zone for the most part.
I do want to give credit to the defense because it was interesting. I talking to Ross Bell after the game, doing the recap. He said, well, it seemed like the defense played pretty well. And I'm going and I'm looking at the scoreboard and I'm thinking in my mind, you know, can you say the defense played well when they scored 3 offensive touchdowns, when they when the team as a whole gives up 33 points? I know 2 of those comes from a defensive score and a special team score. But a team that normally holds their opponents inside the red zone doesn't hold them inside the red zone in this game. But then I went back and I thought about it. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? They gave him the short field in that situation. They actually had a 4th down stop before the Al Woods penalty. And you know, so the defense would have stopped the Saints there and held them to a field goal. And so really they had the 1 60-yard touchdown drive where they missed. And I think that was the one where Kamara had the 29-yard score where they're missing tackles. And so it is hard for me to put this on the defense at all, really.
No, not at all. Like, I mean, you can put some blame there. I mean, the tackling was truly poor. But the defense honestly played well enough for us to win.
Yeah.
You know, the offense as a whole played well enough for us to win. Unfortunately, our running back and our punter and our kick coverage guys did not play well enough for us to win.
Gosh, Nick Ballor. He was the guy. He was the first guy there on that punt return.
There was 4 dudes with a chance on that punt return, and they just like kind of watched him run right between them all.
Yeah.
Like not one dive.
I don't know if they were looking up to see where the football was, and then when they looked back, dude had the ball and was just running.
I guess. I don't know. One place that, I mean, if you do want to talk about some positives, like, the Seahawks offense in the red zone, pretty damn good.
Yeah.
4 or 5. I mean, that's money ball right there. I mean, not settling for field goals. They've been good all year so far in the red zone.
The problem I have with looking at some of the offensive stats in this game is because they were so far behind. And so much of those stats came when they were down 33-7.
Wait, so there might be stats here that don't that don't really tell the story of how a player played, you know? Like,
but Adam,
I don't know.
Russell Wilson, yeah. One of the positives, he had 406 yards and 2 touchdowns passing and 2 touchdowns running. What a great day by Russell Wilson.
What a great day. He had 406 yards. I don't know how he lost. I mean, he threw for 406 yards.
Teddy Bridgewater only had 177 yards.
Yeah.
Don't we count wins in the NFL by judging how many yards each quarterback threw for?
Yeah, that's how you do it.
We out-yarded them by almost 230 yards.
Yeah, 2-1. It's really ridiculous. I mean, we've been poking fun at this for years now.
I know.
And this just is another performance that is indicative of the fact that passing yards don't freaking matter.
Yeah.
But I was happy for him to get the late touchdown throw to Disley because that helped me in my bet with the Rams guys. So that was nice.
That was nice. Another place where I think we can legitimately give the defense credit in this game, holding Kamara to just 69 rushing yards, Bridgewater to just 12 rushing yards in a game where they were so massively in control of the score. Mm-hmm. I would have expected those stats to be higher at the end of the day.
Yeah. Oh, but again, you go up by a couple scores real quick. If you're Sean Payton, you don't have Drew Brees. Like, you get awful conservative real fast. You know, just let that clock run down and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
You know, hope for one or two dumb mistakes by the opposition. You know, more at that point, which he gets. And you get a home loss.
Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. Bobby having 19 tackles. KJ having 12.
Yeah, linebackers, I mean, they had a lot of tackles. They also had a lot of missed tackles. One thing we didn't talk about at all is the pass rush. Mainly the reason we probably didn't talk about it is we didn't notice any of it.
The one time you noticed it was when the Saints were backed up. I think it was on their own 2-yard line. Teddy Bridgewater able to evade the rush of Jadeveon Clowney and, you know, break out for about a 12-yard run. Almost picked up a first down on what, 3rd and 14, something crazy like that.
Yeah, yeah, that was a roller coaster ride of emotion right there.
Made it interesting, but at least there was a pass rush there in that situation. I think listening to Pete Carroll after the game, they didn't want to blitz Bridgewater a whole lot, and I can see why, is that Bridgewater effectively handled the blitz well through the game when they did do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's something he is known for. I thought his mobility looked better than it did, you know, in any of his preseason starts or his mop-up duty last year.
No turnovers. That's the one thing that I think you were counting on with Bridgewater being back there, is that, you know, they would probably give up some turnovers, and on a wet day, they don't even give any up.
Nope, that'd be
just us. Just on the punter, on the one punt that he muffed.
Yep. So really, I mean, you lose the turnover battle, you can't tackle anybody. And you end up losing.
They did.
A couple bad clock management situations. It was just ugly, man. It was tough to watch.
There was clock management even at the end of the game. You know, they complete a pass to get inside the red zone with about 40 seconds. Again, they don't take a timeout. They spike it instead, which takes more time off the clock. And then the only deep shot after they get inside the red zone was on an offsides play by the defense. They use up all their time just to get that short Will Disley touchdown as time expires.
Well, it doesn't much matter. You're not winning at that point.
Well, I know, but at 40 seconds left,
yeah,
go back to another coaching decision. When they score the touchdown to get within 14, it's 33-20. There's no downside in going for 2 points at that point. If you make it, then you could tie it up with a field goal and a touchdown. Along with that 2-point conversion, but instead they choose just to kick the extra point, which means that they have to get 2 touchdowns. Say if they go for 2, get the 2 points in that situation, you complete the and everything plays out the exact same way, which I know is a dumb game to play, but we can do it. And you complete that pass to get inside the red zone with 40 seconds on the clock. Then you just kick the field goal, and then you can go for the onside kick. And if you recover, then you have that time to go for an end zone touchdown, maybe a Hail Mary at the end of the game. You have options that way. But again, just little coaching tweaks that had it gone a little bit different way, maybe you give yourself an opportunity.
Yeah, weird coaching decisions, chasing points. You know, as you were saying, going for it on fourth in a couple situations there that don't make a ton of sense. But again, I don't hate it. But chasing points there while, you know, leaving points out there that would make a big difference in the math going forward with the 2-point conversion opportunity that they declined to go for. So, yeah, it's just a head scratcher. The whole game's a head scratcher. And so now you got to decide as a fan, you know, you watch the team struggle in 2 wins against not great teams and then come out and get, you know, more or less trounced at home. I understand the final score doesn't look that way, but really they got pushed around.
That was like, it felt like it was going to be that type of loss that they had against the Rams when it was what, 42-7.
Yeah.
Where it was the worst home loss of Pete Carroll's career. It was at that point. If you don't score, but they able to score points, that makes the score look a lot closer than the game really was.
Exactly. And so you got to start asking yourself, like, who is this team? I mean, I guess we'll know a little bit more after they go down to the cursed stadium there in Arizona and see how they perform on the road against a much lesser Cardinals team. And then, you know, you've got 25% of the season complete. And now you can start trying to formulate where you feel like this team is going. I honestly believe, watching this body of 3 weeks worth of work, that the team overall is trending in the right direction. It's very similar to teams that have had success under the Pete Carroll era. You know, going back, they look exactly the same sort of struggles early. I would expect them to pull it together again around week 6 through 9, somewhere in there, and rattle off a bunch of wins and either win the division or get in as a wild card. Like, I wouldn't back off of that prediction. That's for sure.
Well, they have two of their most important games in this next stretch in about 10 days, maybe even a shorter period than that. What are we at, like the next 7 days? Because you have Arizona on Sunday and then you have to turn right around. You come home and you play the LA Rams. And the reason why I say it's so important is because look at how the NFC West is playing out. Mm-hmm. Rams are undefeated. The 49ers are undefeated going into their bye this week.
All right. I want to make a new rule in NFL football across the board. If you don't make it to 7 wins, or let's say 6 wins. 6 wins with 0 losses. Like, if you cannot be called undefeated until you make it to 6. Okay.
The Detroit Lions right now, Adam, are undefeated.
Okay. I mean, but I think
two wins and they have 1 tie. They have not been defeated.
Undefeated makes it sound like they're some sort of juggernaut. Okay. If you want to say that the Niners have won 3 in a row, all right.
Okay.
I'm with you. Okay. But yeah, undefeated, okay, as if like they're on a march to, the, you know, take on the 16-0 1972 Dolphins. I don't think so.
I don't know where you're necessarily getting this from, because I think all of us are smart enough to know that we're all going into week 4 of the NFL season.
No, but it's just the way the hyperbole is around certain teams, right? You know, I mean, oh my gosh, here are the 49ers we've been trying to predict for the last 3 years. And it's like, are they?
Yeah.
Like, I really want to see this for more than, you know, 3 games before I'm ready to declare that the 49ers are a force to be reckoned with and somebody that I'm at all concerned about. Like, I need to see it.
Okay. Well, you have 2 teams in the NFC West now with 3 wins and 0 losses. All 3 of those wins have been in a row.
Yes, they have.
Which I think makes it important that the Seahawks keep pace by now winning their division rival games.
Well, of course. I mean, division games are always a big deal.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the upcoming game against Arizona, in terms of importance, as far as, are we going to have to worry about the Cardinals and the standings, it's not all that important. In terms of, you got to stack wins against lesser teams when you can, this game against the Cardinals is important.
It's really important when you, especially when you look down the schedule. Now, I know the team says they're not doing this, but fans, we all do this. We look down the schedule and then we see the LA Rams on the Thursday game.
Who haven't particularly played well in any other game.
They haven't played all that great. They've definitely been in tight games, but I think the defense for the Rams has improved over the way it was last year.
Nope.
they go on the road to Cleveland, which they haven't shown a whole lot, but I think they have potential. And then you have the Baltimore Ravens, which have looked pretty good. So it's a tough three-game stretch after the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. If you lose the game and you go now 2-2, losing two games that you probably should have won into the next three games, it doesn't look as good.
Yeah, so, you know, win against Cardinals, right? Like, that's paramount, just in the sense of stacking wins. Then you get a short week that the LA Rams have to travel for. That is a huge advantage to play at home on Thursday night. That's a really large advantage, and especially with a Rams team that doesn't look great. So I don't look at that team and go, oh my gosh, like, do we ever have a chance against the star-studded Cooper Kupp-led Rams? Yeah, I think we very much do, and probably will win that game. Just by fact that you get a Thursday night game at home, that's really tough to turn around and travel on. Then you have the extra time to prepare for the Ravens, who, that's a great matchup. I mean, they play our style of ball. And so will it be a difficult game? Sure. But that's our kind of game.
And it is home. And those are the games that it seems like this team steps up for, rather than a game against the Saints where you're coming in against a backup quarterback. And I know that they don't take any opponents more lightly than another, but gosh, there has to be some mindset that creeps in to a lot of these players where they go, oh, we're just taking on the backup this week. It feels different to me as a fan. Now,
yeah,
I know it's that true. Each individual player, they have their individual matchups where they're going up against, you know, their particular, you know, the dude that they're lining up against. You know, Trey Flowers, you know, he wasn't taking it off because he knows he's still got to go up against Michael Thomas, right?
Yeah, that's a big deal. And, you know, and he did okay against Michael Thomas. Like, he got beat on some slants for sure.
He was about as good as you could expect against a Pro Bowl wide receiver. And I think part of Flowers' issue so far this season is we're seeing that improvement now on the opposite side of the field with Shaquille Griffin. And he was going up against Ted Ginn Jr., who I would expect, you know, Shaquille Griffin to be able to handle that matchup. And so it made sense to me that the Saints are going to go to Michael Thomas in a lot more situations, going to target the linebackers in a lot more situations.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Michael Thomas only had 5 receptions. It's not like he went out there and lit us on fire.
No.
Again, the Saints were just put in almost every advantageous situation that you could be in on the road to come away with a win. And I mean, really, at the end of the day, it was only 6 points. So, I mean, it wasn't terrible. But I do, you know, look at that loss and be like, all right, I think that's something that this team is able to flush. We go down to Glendale and we take on this gimmicky as shit team in the Arizona Cardinals. I have not watched a lot of Cardinals. I sat down and I watched some Cardinals today. And basically, cover everything within 10 yards.
Yeah.
And find one fast dude who all he does is sit and like run after Kyler Murray. That's it. And you got this offense stopped.
This is not, I think of air raid teams, and I think of teams that go downfield, that attack downfield, and Kyler Murray is not throwing passes that far downfield. It's everything short. No. So unless they change and start doing that, maybe this is the week that they go downfield to guys like Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald. But if they're just going to throw everything short, I would agree with Bobby Wagner, where it's like, yeah, this doesn't frustrate me at all. I just have to look who gets the ball and square guy up and hit dudes like over and over and over.
Yeah, they're going to be right in front of him.
Yeah.
So, and if he can be a little bit of an anticipatory player, I'm sure he could bait Kyler into a pick or two.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyler's looked okay. He's not...
Well, he has been efficient, right? At completing those short passes. That's one thing that the positive that you at least, at the very least, in that offense where they're throwing the ball short, he's completing his passes. So the accuracy is there. The speed to get the ball out's there. So he's doing that part of it. But when you
it's one read and go.
When it's
one read and go, that's what he's doing.
And when your yards per attempt is under 5, and it was at 4 in this last game, that's not good enough for the NFL.
No,
like you can't consistently do that all the way down the field, and unless you're Tom Brady.
Yeah, and even Tom Brady gets his chunk play here and there, right?
Right.
And I just, Am I looking at Kyler at this point and being like, told you so, gonna be a bust? No. I mean, it's very early, and this is what you would do early on with a young quarterback, especially with an offensive line that truly is terrible. And I was thinking about this coming into the preview for the Cardinals, and you hear all of the NFL executives lament how there's no good offensive linemen coming from the draft. Mm-hmm. Because they all play in this air raid system, right?
Right.
And so wouldn't that make you think that if you switched your offense to an air raid type system, that there would be a lot more players that have the attributes and the practice to fit in and play well in that system as an offensive lineman, rather than trying to take them and like plug them in more traditional set like the Seahawks?
Well, then why do you go after traditional type linemen? DJ Humphreys has been in the league forever. Justin Pugh's been in the league forever. J.R. Sweezy's been in the league forever. A.Q. Shipley, he's a younger guy, right?
Yeah.
So that's your
one. I think he's like a third-year guy, right? Yeah. I don't know.
And Jordan Mills is their right tackle who stinks.
He's terrible. But you would think that with this... Well, let's say you even got guys that have played 4 or 5 years, right? But like their college background was that air raid background. Wouldn't you think that they would be really good at that?
We should trade Jermaine Effetti to the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, now you're onto something.
John Schneider could talk him into this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they have Texans. A player that we actually want, but...
I don't know. No, I don't think so.
Budda Baker.
Okay, Budda Baker. He's not even starting for them.
I thought he was. I thought he was their starting free safety.
Oh, is he? Okay. I thought I saw he wasn't.
Chandler Jones. We could use another.
Yeah, so, I mean, being realistic, going into this game, the one guy that I look at on that Arizona defense that I feel like has played at a relatively decent level has been Chandler Jones. 3 sacks so far this year. But... he's also a guy as well that has been down there a few years, and a guy that I've never been afraid of. The team has never been afraid of, and we've tend to neutralize him every time we play him. So that's your one guy. And then the other is Ancient Suggs and Patrick Peterson is still suspended for cheating.
Yeah.
I'm not too worried about it. The Panthers were able to run on him pretty good. And I mean, Kyle Allen, you go, who's Kyle Allen? Like, that's a very generic name. Yeah. Yeah, he was just random generic white quarterback that went out there and played for the Panthers last week.
And got 4 touchdowns.
And ended up with 4 touchdowns. I have a feeling we should have our way with this defense.
You do have Corey Peters inside the interior. And the way Justin Britt's been playing, I do have some slight concern there. That
Britt wasn't great week one. He's been fine since.
I want some guys that be more than just fine, though. And even the crazy thing is, Adam, I'm looking at Pro Football Focus, the highest graded offensive lineman on the Seahawks offensive line, DJ Fluker.
Yeah.
Not Dwayne Brown, not veteran Mike Iupati, DJ Fluker, who gave up, what, 3 sacks in week one.
Sure. Their grades are also not like miles away from being above average players in among PFF's rankings.
Sure.
Like, again, how do you rank offensive line play? I mean, honestly, how many times does a guy give up a sack, but really he was supposed to have help from the other guy, or the back was supposed to chip?
Well, that's why I don't necessarily look at individual grades. But when I look and I see a bunch of guys who are not so great, I go, yeah, that's probably pretty accurate. They haven't been that great this year.
Okay, this is how I look at the offensive line. I look at how they actually performed, right? Like, we've been able to run the ball pretty much every game.
Right.
And they had one really bad half of pass protection against the Steelers. That's it.
Yeah, they gave up a lot of pressure to the Saints, though. Cam Jordan particularly.
Well, yeah, he's Cam Jordan. So, and Russ neutralized it. That's why you have a guy like Russell Wilson.
You give credit to Russell Wilson for that last game, for how he didn't take a sack.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Like, these guys are playing pretty well. It's coming together. And again, out of all the position groups, that might be one of the hardest ones to come back in and reacclimate to after an offseason.
And I want to take until week 5 or week 6 before I really have my opinion of the offensive line.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. That's all I was getting at.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, hell, like, might as well just throw in Fant then for Dwayne Brown, right? Bench him.
Oh,
dude. Bench Dwayne Brown. Yeah, let's get Fant in there.
He's listed as a biceps injury for this game.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a shoulder.
Who, Fant?
No, Dwayne Brown.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was an arm thing. Okay. Yeah.
Well, shoulder, biceps, that's part of the arm.
I don't know. I'm worried for Effetti a little bit this game. They look to take Chandler Jones and like put him on whoever the weakest link is on one side or the other.
Yeah. And, I feel like Cam Jordan, though, is of equal, you know, you've had your warm up for Chandler Jones.
Yeah, and I wasn't impressed with the Effetti show out there, right?
No, but they got through it.
But they got through it.
And they had more than, and the New Orleans defensive line is more than just one guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas you kind of think of the Arizona line. Yeah, Suggs is a veteran, but and he
but it's just he was a veteran 10 years ago. Yeah. You know, and I have nothing but respect for Terrell Suggs. I've made an amazing career.
Yeah.
Hell of a ball player.
Has he been in the league as long as Tom Brady? When did these guys retire?
Right. I mean, there comes a point.
Yeah, a lot of questionables on the injury report. Quentin Jefferson, Penny, Ziggy Ansah, Puna Ford, Trey Flowers, yeah, Posick.
I'll play then. Posick for probably Penny.
You don't think Penny? He was supposed to be out practicing.
Yeah, and then he wasn't.
Yeah. Really? This week?
Yeah, yeah. Hurt himself in a walkthrough. How do you hurt yourself in a walkthrough?
You rub up against, you know what it is? What's that John Goodman movie with Denzel Washington?
Yeah, we always say, we bring this one up, and then we never remember the title
Fallen.
Of the movie.
I think it's called Fallen.
There we go.
Procise passed on the injury bug to Rashad Penny.
It's starting to look that way. Very strategic timing for him. You know, because Procise now has a real opportunity to become the lead guy, right?
He has the opportunity, but does he have the ability? Watching him try and run up the middle... I was concerned that if he was going to be able to get up or not, and he's not a small running back.
Right. Yeah, he's not a banger. I mean, that's not his forte. I mean, he's a bigger guy. He should be able to, you know, be an effective back between the tackles. But, I mean, he's obviously no Carson that way. But that's fine as long as he holds on to the freaking ball.
Yes, if we could not give up the football by a running back for 1 week, just 1 week.
That'd be great. Oh, yeah, I'd like to see the turnovers get figured out. I'd love to see the penalties get figured out. But like I said last week, that ain't happening. The penalties, that's just something we're going to live with because that's what we do. But yeah, the turnovers, like we can't be on the minus side of the turnover differential.
Yes, because that's what could put a team like Arizona in this game.
Yeah, totally. That and the fact that it's all built on a ancient Indian burial ground.
We're not going to talk about that. My favorite thing was listening to the press conference. All the press conferences and the reporters are asking like Pete Carroll and Bobby Wagner about, you know, just the feeling of going into that building and them just having no clue like what the reporters are even getting at. And I don't know if they're playing dumb on purpose. Or if it just, you know, we play up these storylines about Arizona, the football field being built on an Indian burial ground, that it's just so much in our heads as fans and just not. And clearly, I guess I don't want my coaches and players even concerning themselves with that.
Well, here's the thing. I do know that us as fans tend to look back at past seasons and even past games within a season much more so than players do. I mean, they really do try to focus on the task at hand, right? Yeah. But when you lose a bunch of Hall of Famers in one game on one field forever,
yeah, like and a Super Bowl,
I think that sticks in your head.
I wonder if they were in the home team locker room in that game, if that helps.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Just a weird thought.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird place. And it's a weird team we get to play with, Kingsbury and his Wazoo, you know, air raid offense.
His wonky
where he
eye.
Runs like, well, so who are we trotting out there at corner? I mean, obviously it's going to be, you know, Taylor, Griffin, and Flowers. Who's your fourth corner? Is it going to be Ugo? Because they run four wide receivers way more than any other team in the league.
Akeem King, maybe, as a guy that you put, is he healthy?
I think so.
I would put Akeem King on Fitz.
Okay.
And have him be the fourth.
I don't know. Taylor played pretty well. I might go with him on Fitz.
Oh.
You're not going to get burned deep necessarily, but he'll catch anything thrown his way. Like, yeah. I mean, his hands are still incredible.
Yeah, inside the red zone. Yeah, I think that's where you have to worry about him.
Yeah, he's still doing work out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kirk is probably their best receiver at this point.
I would peg him as the best, yeah.
And then a bunch of guys I don't care about. But, yeah, and then at that point, then, you know, Bobby Wagner just shuts down David Johnson, right? And that's the end of that.
It's interesting that you bring up the receivers, because this is a team that
cut... Oh, Crabtree! Crabtree's going to be out there.
No, they cut Michael Crabtree. Michael Crabtree was not after good enough to be among this wide receiver group for the Arizona Cardinals.
He played last week.
They cut him.
This week they cut him?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
He played against the Panthers?
Yeah. I saw him catch one.
Okay.
I was like, oh, right, Crabtree. It'd be fun seeing him again.
Yeah, nope, you're not going to.
He gone.
On that note, we be gone to the second half.
Sounds like a plan.
Getting to the second half of the show, Adam, and if people want to join the Seahawkers, they can go to Seahawkers.org, sign up for a local chapter there. I know you and I, we got our renewal request in the mail or in our email this week for renewing mm-hmm. our Montana Seahawkers membership, and I got to get that done.
Yeah, yeah, we'll need to get on that for sure.
But we can do that at Seahawkers.org, or I can. I'll do it for you.
Yeah, so that's how these things work, yeah. But thank God they make it convenient, you know, so it's not too terribly difficult for you.
Looking at the transaction wire, we mentioned the trade to the Steelers for Nick Vinette. We mentioned Luke Wilson mm-hmm. signing. We didn't mention the fact that they released Ja'Kai Polite from the practice squad, the former third round pick that the Jets had. He goes to the Rams. But then in transactions that actually matter, initially Gary Jennings was reportedly waived from the team. Mm-hmm. And then they decided, no, we're not going to waive him. And they rescinded their waiving, which I didn't even know you could do.
Yeah.
And now they waived defensive tackle Brian Monet.
Interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
Well, I guess they feel with, you know, Jaron Reed eventually coming back and Puna Ford showing himself, Quentin Jefferson showing himself to be a very good player, Rasheem Green, you know, really doing well. I mean, they didn't even have room on that D-line to bring in Collier. You know, he was a healthy scratch last week.
That's true.
So you make a little space that way. You hold on to Jennings, which I know they like Jennings. And then they also brought in the former Niners safety, right? Colbert?
Adrian Colbert. Yeah, that's right. And yeah. I like that move.
Sure. I mean, what do you make of Lano? Is it Lano or Lano? Did we ever decide this?
Lano, I think.
Lano.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll stand my Lano on this one then. But yeah, Lano Hill supposedly winning the starting job for now.
Yeah. And Pete Carroll said, any thoughts on that? Well, I kind of feel like it doesn't matter too much. Between him and Tedrick. I actually think that he has played better than Tedrick, though, because I haven't really noticed him. Apart from, I think he was one of the missed tackles on Kamara mm-hmm. on his touchdown run, but, you know, he mm-hmm. wasn't the only one.
Right. Now, does that make you a little disappointed in the lack of emergence in Marquise Blair to this point?
Yeah, a little bit. I thought we'd be seeing him on the field more.
Yeah. But they seem to really... they seem to like this kid from the Niners, you know, super fast and a thumper. You know, this is their kind of player. They've had their eyeballs on him for a while, apparently.
Hey, if he can be the one out there playing on special teams instead of Nick Ballore, that's an upgrade. Because they don't have...
He could end up being your starting free safety, dude. Or he could be your backup strong safety with McDougald all banged up.
Yeah, McDougald's banged up too. Yeah, it's a little bit frustrating with Blair. I'm not ready to say that he's a bust or anything, but it's disappointing when you look at the Rams and they have Taylor Rapp in the starting lineup and the Seahawks have Marquise Blair, who's not starting and not even getting time with injured guys.
Yeah, true fact. But again, that speaks to both Blair and Collier getting injured early on in the training camp process and all that, and just missing a lot of time.
Oh, well.
Oh, well. So all that stuff that we wrang our hands about, you know, going into the draft and then like being overly hyped about all the players coming out of the draft. It turns out none of that really mattered when the start of the season came around.
Well, it's interesting how the draft works for the Seahawks because, you know, last year we're starting to see the guys that they drafted last year play a bigger part on this team. And so that's positive. And I was even, you know, when Jennings was initially released, I pointed out the fact that he's the first draft pick that the Seahawks have actually moved on from. You know, it was Brian Monet who was the undrafted free agent who made the team. But every single other one of those guys, you know, DeMarcus Christmas, he wasn't waived. He's on the PUP list because of injury. Phil Haynes is on the PUP list because of injury. And they've kept all of those other draft picks on the roster. So they've still managed that they haven't seen anything from these guys that have made them say, hey, we're ready to move on.
Right. I mean, maybe that's just a mark of, hey, not ready yet, but we like their development and we really love the idea of them contributing late in the year or being a much larger contributor in year two.
Speaking of contributors in year two, we have some new members of the flock.
Heck yeah, really? Even after a loss?
It takes 2 years.
It does. It takes 2 years.
I don't know if it took 2 years for all these folks, but we do have Jeff Powell, who is in at the 12-12 level. Welcome to the flock, Jeff.
Oh, welcome to the Ring of Honor, Jeff.
I sent him the invitation to join the Facebook group, and I don't think he's pulled through with that yet.
Oh, well, I mean, maybe he just wants to be thought of as a Ring of Honor type of guy, but just doesn't need to participate on online stuff. And that's just not his gig.
And that's fine.
Yo, I get it. Trust me.
If people don't get their invite, though, they need to reach out to me because we have had a few of these. The invite system is kind of messed up, but there's another way that I can add people if that falls through. So don't be afraid to reach out to me. We'll get you added to the Ring of Honor group if you're having struggles with it, you know, because it happens. Someone who won't be participating in the Facebook Ring of Honor group but is going to be in at the Ring of Honor level. And he's not participating in the Facebook group because his dad says he's not old enough to have Facebook yet. But Bryce Shaw, welcome to the flock in at $12.
Yeah, welcome, little buddy. Yeah, well, unfortunately, not quite old enough for the social, which I totally am on board with.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's a forward-thinking father right there.
Yeah, my daughter's 11. She's not on Facebook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my kid was probably on Facebook
I think kids that are younger than, I don't know, 22 probably don't care about being on Facebook.
No. In fact, like I heard my daughter like yelling about Snapchat the other day. She's like, it's just gotten so stupid. Like that's already passed her by now. So I don't even know what the next thing is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, it was cool for us coming up because we never had anything to connect with people from school.
Right?
Just listen, kids, when we were in high school, there was not such a thing as social media.
Right? Back in the day.
Mm-hmm. And then MySpace came along.
Yeah.
Game changer.
Yeah. Then I got to buy some sliced bread once. That was fun.
Welcome to the flock to Bryce. Also, welcome to the flock to Scott Mulholland in at $5.
Right on. Welcome, Scott. Welcome to the Pick'em group.
Yeah.
That I'm not doing amazing at. So there's that. I'm hoping to pick up a little bit better here these next couple weeks, but yeah.
Oh yeah, that reminds me, the week 3 winner, Ryan in Chatham, England, with 13 points. He gets the tiebreaker. Had two other people score 13 points. We did have one person score 14 points, but they picked the Seahawks and were disqualified.
Oh, they picked against the Seahawks.
Right.
They picked the Saints?
They picked the Saints.
Yeah, you can't pick against your team. We've gone over this 1,000 times.
Yeah. How do people not realize this? There is no benefit to you in our Pick'em League at picking against the Seahawks.
Right.
You will either you'll either lose that game or your pick won't count.
Right. Like, it will come to light. Like, we all see the picks, okay? It's not like you're going to sneak one in there.
No. Yeah, and when the results are posted up at SeahawkersPodcast.com, pick 'em, The results of every game are on there.
Right.
And it's one little button click now that we're on Yahoo to where I can say disqualify game and it doesn't count toward the point standings.
There we go.
That's the one beautiful thing about Yahoo.
Yeah, not a lot of other people seeing the value in this Yahoo Pick'em League to this point.
It's okay. Leo's helping me out. We're going to start having combined point stats here pretty soon. And that's okay. I can put the results up at SeahawkersPodcast.com, Pick'em, and people can go there and look at the results. All of our bonus episodes of the Pick'ems are posted there as well. So if you don't listen on the app, if you don't listen through GetInTheFlock.com, then that's just another place that you can listen to the Pick'em show.
There you go.
And Ryan and Chatham winning a KJ Wright signed 8x10 this week.
Ooh. What? Who was the photo of?
KJ Wright.
Oh, KJ Wright. Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Cool.
I figured KJ had a good game. I have a signed photo. Ryan's, a member of the Ring of Honor.
Sweet.
He needs a good prize.
Congratulations on that. Yeah.
So cool. We also have some other members of the flock that we need to get to. Steven Rubin, in at $5, says, been listening as a freeloader for almost 4 years now and decided it was finally time to do better at life. As a diehard, lifelong Seattle sports fan living in New York City for the past 20-plus years, you guys are a key to my mental sports sanity. Catfish the Yankees. Love the show and the dynamic between you both. Although the show is pretty much perfect as is, I'd love to see you incorporate a segment in honor of Paul Allen. Perhaps change the Better at Life segment that highlights people making the world better. Adam, love your story last week of your old boss. The Paul Gardner Allen Best Life segment. Doing better at life than catfish Skip Bayless is too easy. I mean, putting the toilet seat down makes you better at life than Skippy.
Yeah, true, but not always doable.
That's true. You know what? The one problem with that, I do love the idea of honoring Paul Allen, but finding someone worthy of that spot, it makes it a whole lot more difficult because when it's better at life than Skip, like, you can pick up anything.
Yeah, and not only that, but not a lot of people have billionaire-type assets to do better with. You know what I mean? To do good in the world with?
Oh, no. I think there's still plenty of the people that get recognized could be honored at that level. Mm. It's just I like the added flexibility of just having to be better at life than Skip Bayless.
Well, and it is the oldest running segment on the show.
It's true. We may have to change it at some point, though. I'm not opposed to it.
When is that point? Would you have to change it when Richard Sherman has officially become somebody who's played more years for the 49ers than the Seahawks? Would that be the time?
When Richard Sherman gets to the point that he's considered more of a 49er than a Seahawk.
Which I doubt will
ever. I don't know if that ever happens.
Come to fruition, but
what if Skip Bayless does something super amazing and wins like a Nobel Prize?
I didn't realize we had started a comedy podcast. This is great.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Welcome to the flock to Liad, who is in at $3. Says, hey, Brandon and Adam, a.k.a. the best podcast couple in Seahawks history. Just stopped being a freeloader after 2 to 3 years of enjoying your show. My name is Liad, and I live in Israel. Because I live on the other side of the ocean, the early window game starts at 8 p.m., so it's hard to watch our Seahawks play in the middle of the night. I hope the Seahawks play again in London soon so I can make a game at a reasonable price, because going over to the U.S. is very expensive. Last year, I was in the Israeli army, so I couldn't go to the game in London to meet you. Go on with a great show, and go Hawks.
Oh, go Hawks, man. Well, look, I am a little disappointed that Liad didn't just become a deserter and come and join us.
Right.
I don't know where his priorities are, you know, with this whole, like, defend my country and, you know, serve, protect and serve and do his duty. Like, that's all great and everything, but I feel like we're more important.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Where's the priorities?
Yeah. No, that was, that's awesome, man. Like, I think he's our first listener to write in from Israel, right?
I think so.
Yeah, very cool.
So welcome to the flock to Liad. Welcome to the flock to Tony Ast. says Moin. That's what we say in Northern Germany for hello. It is about time for me to leave the days as a freeloader behind me. You guys are great. Keep up the great work. And Adam, please don't be too rude with Carson. He'll figure it out eventually. At least I hope so. Greetings from Rostock and go Hawks from Tony.
Hey, Tony. Totally agree. I'm rooting for this Carson thing to work itself out. I heard Brian Westbrook, the former Eagles running back, speak on a podcast earlier this week about Carson's fumbling issues. And basically, he's just like, he just holds the ball a little too far away from his body. He needs to get it up against his ribs.
And that's what happened in that play where he lost it against the Saints. You know, it wasn't that he was necessarily carrying it wildly, but when he started to go...
Yeah, not like Shady McCoy wild, right?
He was... So he... I was watching him because he had that ball tucked into his chest as he was running. And then as soon as he started to go down, his left arm went out to brace his fall. And his right arm went out kind of like a chicken wing. And it just so happened that Eli Apple was right there behind him and able to see it and punch it out. So, you know, it's something like that. That's a reflex. And that's so he can be incredibly conscious through it through while running with the football, and then just the reflexive action of going to the ground, and that put the ball in position. And I don't know how you, I don't know how you get out of that.
Well, here's the problem now, right? So he's struggled with ball security so far this year, and you saw it from the first run during the Saints game.
Yeah,
where he gets a pile of dudes on him and they can't seem to bring him down. They blow the whistle dead, but every dude's trying to rip the ball out and punching at it and John at him, you know, hey, no, you can't handle, hold on to the ball. We're coming for you, bro. Like all of that, right?
Yep.
Everybody in the league is, he's now a target to create turnovers, which means like those early turnovers kind of beget more turnovers going down the line because guys are trying harder to turn you over because they think you're more prone to it.
Right.
It's a kind of a, you know, circle of bummer.
It's a vicious cycle.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how you break it. And you seem to see Pete's attitude on it be that most of the ones that have occurred have been relatively fluky in Pete's mind.
Or just a really good play by a defensive player.
That's what I'm saying. Like, fluky in that sense. Not that it's Chris Carson's fault. In Pete's mind. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I have a good question about, what did they say? How do they say good morning in Germany?
Moin, which I hadn't heard. And moin? Moin. Moin.
Okay, so is that like, is that basically the same as just like morning?
I guess so. And you know maybe it's like a Danish thing. Because they're Northern Germany.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying, like, I like that phrase a lot better than good morning. Everybody just says good morning here. Oh, it's like, is it? Are we sure it's a good morning? Mornings are awfully early. I don't like mornings. They're aptly titled. They're a state of mourning for me. I don't like them. Very few of them are good. I'd rather people just take the value statement out of it and just say morning, which is apparently what we got going here in Northern Germany. I think they're getting it right.
Just a statement of fact.
Yeah. Like, it is morning. It's a time of day.
Although it says that's what they use for hello. So I suppose that could be at any time of day.
Oh, okay.
Lastly, Brandon Anderson. In at $1 at getintheflock.com. Brandon, welcome to the flock.
How does he spell his name correctly?
He spells the D-A-N part correctly, but it's B-R-E-N. So Brandon, it's kind of more the Irish spelling.
I need to talk to your mom, Glenda. Like, I need to know like the thought process of the mom who names their child Brandon. You know, a very common name, right? This is coming from a dude named Adam, right? Like, okay, like no disrespect, but it is just common, right? And then they're like, oh man, I'm gonna tweak this by just adding B-R-E. And D-A, and that's going to blow everybody's mind. That makes it all so much more unique.
Well,
and in your case, B-R-A-N-D-A-N.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, if you're doing Brandon at this point, just go with the generic spelling. Like, so we don't all have to guess.
Okay. Well, you know my dad's name was Dan, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's where it came from.
Oh, no, I'd never put two and two together on that.
Adam's mind has been blown.
No, not blown. It just explains it a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah, but that doesn't explain new Brandon.
Brandon.
Or is it Brendan?
Yeah. I think that's more of a traditional Irish spelling.
Oh, okay.
Where's Brendan from?
Here's all I know is I don't see a bunch of alternate spellings for Adam. Like, I don't see like a bunch of ADUMs, ADEMs, you know, like it's just Adam, one way done. Like, we all agreed, like, if you're going to be that name, this is how we spell it. Let's not try to get cute about this.
That must be nice for you.
Well, I mean, it is what it is. Like, I just say it. It makes more sense.
We can't even decide on how to spell Andrew.
If you're going to get cute with a name and, like, redo the spelling of it, you got to go with something, like, with an apostrophe in it, like Debrickishaw. Now you can do it however you like, okay? But if you're going to name somebody Michael, it's going to be spelled one way.
Yeah. But we did have some people from Ireland at our meetup this week.
Hell yeah, man. The whole Irish crew.
Owen and Michael and their dad, John.
Yeah. Yeah. Good dudes, man. I really dig those guys. It's fun hanging out with them and seeing them again. Big effort to get out here. Unfortunately, the Seahawks decided to stink.
Yeah. So. You'd like your first game to be a win.
Yeah.
It never happened for anybody in my family, though. Every single game. I don't know. My mom can't remember if the first game she went to was a win or a loss. So I don't know if it's universal.
Well, if I'm going with win, that'd be my story.
But my first game was a loss back in 1988 against the Saints, no less. Yeah. My brother's first game, my wife's first game was a loss.
That's not good.
No. You have to get it out of the way at some point, though.
You just don't bring them. Like, who do you love more, the Seahawks or your family, Brandon? Think about it.
I didn't take them to a Super Bowl for their first game. I mean, that would be a mistake.
I guess that's conscientious right there. Yeah.
Before we get on to do better and better at life, one of my favorite reviews, Adam, came in.
Oh, okay.
It's titled Bravery in the Face of Danger from Sporty Spree Too Late. It says, meet Adam Emmert, undoubtedly the only sports podcast host who has ever been bluff charged by a marmot. 5 stars.
That's hilarious. Yes, probably true. And definitely the only one to have been like legit afraid while being bluff charged by that marmot.
DCH writes in, says, Brandon and Adam, thanks fellas for a wonderful weekend in Seattle. Not sure you both understand how incredibly important you are to the Flockers and how lucky so many of us feel to have a community like the one you've created over the years. Meeting all of our folks is truly a pleasure. We all look forward to it and we do it because of you guys. I know it's going to be a pain in the ass some weeks to get a show out for us. And the fact that you care is what makes us care. At the end of the day, community is all you got. And ours is a pretty damn good one. So a great big thanks from MCH, little MCH, and DCH. We love you guys and can't wait to see you all soon. Until next time, go Hawks and catfish! The Rams. Cheers from DCH.
Yeah, I loved hanging out with all the CHs. Real joy to be able to sit next to them during the game. And little MCH, like, he's got a sound drop that we need to play. Every time I do something wrong, he's got a nice, succinct way of saying, bad Adam. So we need to get that recorded. We need to be able to get that in as a sound drop,
yes.
Much like the catfish sound drop.
There we go.
Yeah, because little MCH is hilarious.
Yeah, so many fun people showed up at that game. Sam Sullivan making the trip from Kansas.
Yeah.
It was his first game, too, so he comes for an L, but Hong Kong Hawk with the longest trip coming over from Hong Kong, obviously.
Yeah.
Becca coming up from Manhattan Beach.
Yeah. No, it was quite the crew, man. It was really fun. We had talked earlier about where we were going to sit for the game, and I was going to take our normal tickets.
Yeah.
Which I didn't realize this year were actually, you know, under the awning for sure in like in a really nice spot.
Yeah.
And didn't even think much about the rain. It's September. It's going to be beautiful. It's the most beautiful time of the year. It's hooray. It's the fall.
We'll sit up by the 12 flag. That's a good spot.
That'll be cool. And I'd much rather sit with everybody else, right? Like, I want to hang out with all the little Flockers. We got dumped on. It wasn't cold. It wasn't cold. At least
it wasn't cold.
So that was nice.
Holy smokes. Every time I complained about how hard it was raining, it started raining harder.
Yeah, that seemed to be a common theme.
It was on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eric with a K, congratulations. He says got married yesterday after
On Facebook. Yeah, bud.
After being official with her for 12 months, 12 days, 12 hours, and 12 minutes. Tied the knot at 12:12 p.m. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Hey, man. Congratulations, Eric. That's awesome, dude. Looks like you guys are super happy. And yeah, you've been due for some good luck, buddy. And I'm glad to see it come your way.
For sure. And a shout out to Doc Scott, who just checked in and said, what an ugly, ugly game. I have nothing more to say. Hope you're both good. Go Hawks.
Don't hear from Doc a lot, but I'm glad that was how he... Hopefully that made him feel better about what we just saw.
It made me feel better. I'd like it when people check in, you know, just yeah. When it's been a while.
Hey, still listening, you know, yeah. To mention people who haven't checked in a while, that we haven't heard anything. When's the last time we've heard from Ross Wilwerding?
Yeah. Well,
Where have you been?
He came to the 49ers game last year.
Yeah, I know.
But it's been a little while.
Yeah, it's been a minute. I'm just saying.
I think I've heard from Ross's mom in more recent times than I've heard from Ross.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Call your mom, Ross. Call us.
One of the two.
Yeah.
All right. On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. We got for do better.
My do better this week is for a member of the Redskins staff who, Adam, he needs to be fired.
Okay. Wow. You're not one to call for people's jobs.
I'm normally not one to call for people's jobs, but this was one of the most disgusting displays that I've ever seen, and it was right on camera on Monday Night Football, and there's this video that got circulated from the Monday Night Football game where this team staffer, who is old enough to know better, by the way, because from what I can tell, he has a gray mustache, and he's in the background behind Coach Jay Gruden stirring the Gatorade. And he's not stirring it like with a large ladle like you should, or maybe even like a wooden paint stick that's, you know, just designated to be the Gatorade stir stick.
The straw that turns the drink, right?
Yeah, yeah. No, he's using a pack of cups in the plastic wrap to stir the Gatorade.
Couldn't be bothered to find a stick. Sorry, bro.
No.
All these cups that have a whole totally different use, I'll just use those for this. Why not?
Who knows what kind of storage situation those cups have been in, by the way. That, you know, it's not sanitary on the outside of the package.
Now I see where this is coming. Because you are a bit of a germaphobe. Because you are a bit of a germaphobe, so now I can see where this is coming from. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I am I'm okay. But it just seems weird.
You're not crazy town about it, but you definitely are very conscientious about it. Yes.
I'm aware. And this, to me, it crossed the line. Random Skins team staffer, do better.
Yeah, man. Yeah, just find they don't come with stir sticks like the Gatorade packs.
You just find something that's, you know, designated as the Gatorade stirrer. I mean, I don't even see how a pack of plastic cups is all that effective. I mean, I guess.
No. I mean, I got it done, I guess. I don't know. I bet you that was either some Gatorade that was very granular, or there was it was very sweet on the bottom.
Yeah, you got to get that long ladle.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a cheap football team.
Right. All right, guys, can you see like, you know, the Redskins being like, all right, guys, here's the thing. We got to start cutting back on costs, you know, so we can go out and get some better free agents for next year. Josh Norman's contract's a lot. We got to afford that. So I was doing a budget analysis, and where we really need to cut down on stuff here is stir sticks. Okay. Going to have to get creative, guys. All right. Just figure it out.
In that case, if that conversation happened, I will rescind my do better.
All right. It feels unlikely.
Because then it's actually kind of smart.
All right. My do better this week, Brandon, is also sideline-ish related. Mm. And I didn't really see this coming, even though I had read an article that should have tipped me off earlier. But it's time to announce the team, you know, pregame, right? And they bring out the pyrotechnic towers, right?
Yeah.
You know, just outside of the Silver Seahawk, right? That the players run out of the tunnel through the pyrotechnics and they call out their names and we all cheer and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was raining really hard. And so, like, the first defensive player introduced, like, comes running out and the little, you know, jets go off. Poof, and it's just like steam.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fire. And I'm like, what's going on here? Like, why is there no fire? Like, I'm thinking maybe it's just like a malfunction, right? You know, like they couldn't figure it out. But no, this was planned. Like, this is what it was doing. Now we just shoot out puffs of like steam and air because some other team had a problem with one of those things tipping over on the field and starting a small fire. You freaking cowards. That made it all look freaking stupid, especially on a rainy ass day in Seattle. Nothing was starting on fire that day, no matter how hard you tried. Wasn't happening. So for belittling the player introductions and making it far stupider and lamer, do better. That was dumb.
Yeah, that was at the Titans game where one of them tipped over. And I did notice, though, at the bottom now, they do have brackets, like anti-tippy brackets around the base now, which, why didn't they have those before? But, and I can see clearly in the picture of the one that actually caught the field on fire that there were no brackets. So that was an upgrade. That was a change that they've made between weeks 2 and 3 now.
Sure. Okay. So bracket dealies, no bracket dealies. Either way, they have been, these little torch guys have gone off how many times before how many games over the past how many years?
Yeah.
In one time, one gets knocked over and starts a small fire in which it's extinguished and nobody gets hurt. Now nobody has any fun ever again when it comes to pregame introductions and fire. Like, that's just done now?
And that's like, part of the problem.
What kind of knee-jerk reaction is this?
Well, and that's part of the problem when you have, you know, leagues in charge of things that just aren't allowing local people to make their own decisions. Because I'm sure the local people could have said to themselves, well, it's raining today, so we're probably pretty safe. Let's just go ahead and do it. No, the NFL ban league-wide.
I don't care if Smokey the Bear himself walked out on the field and declared the fire danger for the day extreme. Like, we're still doing the fire thingies, okay? We're still doing it. It's in the middle of a stadium with a fake freaking field. Like, fire extinguishers everywhere. And there's first responders there because they're there to, like, roll out the flag and stuff at the beginning of the game. We have all hands on deck for this. Yeah. Everything is going to be fine. If there was ever a time to not worry about this, this would be the time and the place. But no, one dumbass in Tennessee knocks one over, and now we get little puffs of steam. It's freaking ridiculous.
It looked pretty lame. The fire is definitely a lot cooler than steam.
Yeah. I honestly thought things were malfunctioning.
On to better at life.
All right. So my better at life this week, Brandon, is for a young man from Charlotte who is a diehard Seahawks fan. And that might be enough right there. Just knowing that there is a young man in Charlotte, a diehard Seahawks fan.
Like, winner.
Awesome. Good for him. And he was pointed out to us by Gary Bloom, one of our Ring of Honor members. And I appreciate him bringing this story to our attention.
Gary Bloom. Yeah.
I like Bloom. Okay. Is it Judy Blum or Judy Bloom?
It's Gary Plum. It's Blum like Plum.
I don't know. I'm tired of alternate spellings today. Like, I'm already over it. And alternate pronunciations. Anyways, Gary, or is it Gary? Am I getting it right? Gary.
I think, yeah.
No, Gary. All right. Anyways, send it to us on Facebook. It was great by him. Thank you. And I appreciate that. Anyways, young man in Charlotte, has some health issues. Nobody can really put their finger on exactly what's going on, but like headaches, dizziness, all sorts of medical problems, puts him in and out of the hospital all the time. And it turns out to be a giant Seahawks fan and a giant math nerd. And we all know how much I enjoy nerds. His big thing was that he wanted to be, you know, eventually sometime in his life, be like a sabermetrician for like the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Or like work with the coaching staff or, you know, anything like that. And last week, the team had him out, brought him down to the field, got to meet Coach Carroll, kind of fulfill a lifelong dream. And that was super cool. So to 12-year-old Griffin Chernus, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher that one too, because I'm screwing everyone up today. to young Griffin, to the young man to come in and have that experience and just be a cool kid in Charlotte as a Seahawks fan. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, always cool seeing Seahawks take care of their young fans that way, and especially younger kids who are having a bit of a tough time. And yeah, and hopefully they get it worked out to what's going on there and get him well. And so, yeah, he can be a future sabermetrician for the Seahawks.
Oh, so update. Apparently, they do know what the heck is going on with young Griffin. It's a brain tumor called Gilmora. Apparently, it's very rare. But the reason why Garay brought this up to us is he's actually met the kid. He's kind of like a friend of a friend sort of thing.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, yeah, pretty neat.
Well, my better at life this week is for not a Seahawks fan, but a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. Apparently, I'm going NFC East heavy in my later segments this week. But
Well, you sound like a national media pundit.
I would fit
good
in
job,
well.
Only I'm focusing on anything NFC or AFC East related. You got it nailed.
I am just lined up for my next job. That's how you do these things.
Yeah, don't forget us little people when you become a big deal.
My better at life this week is for Eagles wide receiver Nelson Aguilar. And a part of it is because this, I don't know if you saw this, another video that went viral, but it was from a former firefighter, Hakeem Laws, who was talking about how they were saving kids from a window during a fire. And one of the quotes that he said, one of my old coworkers took the ladder off the truck and raised it up and was assisting people down. My man was just throwing babies out the window. We was catching them, unlike Aguilar. And which is hilarious to me because this Philadelphia Eagles fan, he's such a diehard fan that in the course of explaining a life-saving situation, he takes a moment to drop a bombshell.
Take a sports dig on Aguilar. That is one of the more Philly fan things ever.
Only Philly fan.
Right.
And so what did Nelson Aguilar do when he saw this? Because there was no way that you weren't seeing this. Everybody in the nation saw this clip. And it gets back to Nelson Aguilar. And what does he do? He says, thank you for being a hero in the community. Would like to invite you and your family to the next home game. Twitter, help me out and get me in touch with him.
No, all right, cool. Taking the high road.
Taking the high road, inviting the guy out, turning this around, and make it into a good story. Because he could have gone after the guy. He could have ignored the guy, even though there's no ignoring this possible story. He knows the best way to go about this. I hope he starts catching footballs, and he's better at life than Skip Bayless.
How much do you want to bet the next TD that Aguilar scores, after he scores it, he's going to rock the ball like a baby?
Catching it like a baby.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'd do.
He has to.
Yeah.
If he doesn't do that, there's a problem.
Yeah, that'll be an easy better at life then, right, for that week?
I mean, unless Carson Wentz goes out and legitimately catches a baby from a burning building.
Oh, for sure. And I think with that...
There's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.